Wait, what's our overlying topic for the MAGFest one, though? Gaming conventions? We should try to make it tie into something.
Well, I wanted to know if you...
It's called MAGFest Special, that's fine.
Okay.
Happy New Year, Sean.
Happy New Year, Vink.
Wow, 2013 already.
I know, although last year felt really, really long. Maybe it's because I'm a new dad. I'm not really sure. And you're a second-time dad, too, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought 2012 just kind of flew by.
Yeah, I guess it's all in perspectives, I suppose.
2012 was good for Famicom Dojo, I think.
I think so, too. I think this year will be even better, though. So hopefully this year won't feel like it flies by, because we're going to have so much stuff.
Let me change that. The second half of 2012 was really good for Famicom Dojo. The first half was a barren wasteland.
Yeah, sorry about that. We had those hiccups in the podcast, and not a lot of videos coming out, because, you know, aforementioned babies. But...
Yeah, well, you know... I think if babies are getting in the way of video games, I think, you know, we've got to set our priorities here.
Definitely, definitely. So, yeah, first podcast of the new year. We've had some video. Oh, yeah, VinkCon happened. That's right.
Oh, yes, VinkCon happened. But anyway, we can talk about that later. I think what we really need to get into now is that you've told me we have an excellent first topic for 2013, the first of our podcast topics. Is what is it, Sean?
Oh yeah, so I just got back from MAGFest. Maybe not just, but I went to MAGFest again this year, as I always do, and I gotta tell you, I got a story that I need to share with you that everyone I think needs to hear.
So our topic is MAGFest. Is that the title of our podcast?
Well, no, something that happened at MAGFest, more like, which is that Destructoid stole all my beer.
The first podcast of 2013's title is Destructoid stole all my beer.
Yeah.
Well, so much for 2013.
Listen, no. This is a good story.
Okay. Tell me your story.
So I go to MAGFest.
Back a bit. Yeah. What is MAGFest?
Oh yeah, so MAGFest is the annual music and gaming festival. As I learned a couple of years ago when I first went there, it was originally the Mid-Atlantic Gaming Festival. But it's morphed into this thing that really celebrates video game music, the bands that play it, video games themselves, of course, and a lot of video reviewers, etc., who show up every year. So, like a couple of years ago, it was like that guy with the glasses crew really dominated, and this year it was more like RetroWare TV and stuff. So,
what year is it going to be? Famicom Dojo and Powit TV?
How about 2014? Does that sound good?
Okay, we'll try to make that thing happen. You know, as I said last year, the most disappointing thing about MAGFest is the fact that it's not a reference to Phantasy Star Online.
Right. Yeah. Look at the size of those mags.
I know, but anyway. So wait, where is MAGFest again?
It's in the Washington D.C. area. Technically, it's just outside of D.C. So it goes to Alexandria, Virginia once, and it's been at the Gaylord. National Harbor or something, which I think is officially in Maryland. Who knows?
What got your interest in MAGFest? Because you don't live anywhere near there.
Oh, it's true. No, Syndra, host of the Keep Playing Rewind series on Powit TV, asked me if I wanted to go that first year and then never showed up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you told that story. You told that story last year.
Yeah, so I don't want to repeat it.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, please listen to last year's MAGFest thing. To find out what Vink has forgotten in the year,
right?
But I don't know. Like, there's a lot of closer conventions. What made you stick with MAGFest?
Well, I mean, you know, I get to see people that I don't usually see during the year, which is why I went to conventions around the country, like BotCon, like a decade ago. I would go around to you know, the East Coast and L.A. and stuff. To hang out with people I haven't seen in forever and made a lot of friends, and that's how Powit started, was a bunch of those internet connections, essentially. So there are lots of cool people who show up there. Like I said, you know, that guy with the glasses people are there a lot. The Retroware TV people are there. Destructoid was also there.
All right, get into your Destructoid story.
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, they're a bunch of cool kids. You know, most of them.
Destructoid robot there.
I didn't see the robot. No, no.
I always see Destructoid robot at Tokyo Game Show scaring the local populace.
Right. Yeah. We saw them there my first year in 2007, yep. And I didn't realize who it was at the time. Destructoid started around the same time Powit did. So and they're far more successful. but anywho, I had a Powit friend bring me up to the room party on Saturday night. And he had left a whole beer, like it was Coors Light. I'm really sorry. So it wasn't really my beer. It was Powit beer.
Okay.
And Syndra and her Shiz crew had been doing a Sonic the Hedgehog drinking game. You know, this is not a very family friendly story. So I'll try and keep it. So that's why the beer was there. What's that?
Sonic the Hedgehog drinking. You're like, they were watching the television show or something?
No. There was someone would play the game, and there were certain rules for, like, if they got hit and or died or screwed up in any way. And then if they, like, had some amazing success and the rest of the audience had to drink or whatever. But I barely paid attention. Not the point of the story.
Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Sonic
drinking game seems like it requires more explanation. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So you'll have to ask Cinder for the exact details. Maybe we'll bring her on again sometime and she can explain it to us.
Okay.
But that was all said and done. So we had this leftover stuff and I was like, all right, well, if I'm going up, I'm going to, you know, be a good citizen of the party and then, help contribute. So I did that, came in, talked to a bunch of people about random things. Met a lot of cool kids. Played a video game that I don't know if I really should say a whole lot about because it was like some indie in development thing. It was essentially the concept was kind of like Tug of War, but it played kind of like the fighting style in the original Prince of Persia game.
Okay. You know,
with like the fencing kind of thing. So it was a lot of fun to watch, and I think I played it. Actually, I don't remember if I played it or not, but. There was a lot of stuff going on. So anyway, getting on in the evening, getting really hungry, as one does when you're hopping around from room party to room party. And so we go off, my Powit buddy and I go off to McDonald's, which didn't even show up on my map on my iPhone. So what the heck's all that all about? And I still have iOS 5, by the way. So it's not one of the crappy new maps.
You know, I think the crappiness of the new maps is well. Then again, I live in Japan, so like the Apple Maps and the old Google Maps, not a huge difference for me. But I guess it was sure. Pretty bad in the States.
Yeah, it didn't steer us like into a lake or anything like that. But still, there were McDonald's all around us, and like the one we went to wasn't even there. So that's fine. So it's like 3 a.m. I might have tweeted my meal because it was just this wonderful guilty pleasure, and. I might have like tweaked my hip trying to jump over a median too, but anyway, we head back and it's like, all right, we're fed. We're going to meet up with the rest of our friends in the room party and have some more good times. And we get there and we knock and like no one comes and we knock and still no one comes. And we knock one more time and just like sit there looking all like, you know, badass waiting for someone to answer the door. And we just hear this woman on the other side go, I don't know these people. I'm like, don't know us. We were there like maybe an hour ago. Like, yeah. How could the population of the room have changed that much that they don't remember us having been in there? It's like, do they have our beer? Can we get our beer at least? And they like crack the door open. And it's like, yeah, we're all sleeping in here. I'm like, oh, okay. That's cool. It's like, oh, but if you go up to 7th floor, was the 10th floor? I don't remember what floor it was. There's still some stuff going on there and some other person's party. And we're like, okay, so we're going to go up there. So we go up there. Then we're like, they didn't tell us the room number. So we go up there and we find a room. May have been the one she was talking about, maybe not. And they're like, oh yeah, we're all going to bed in here too. To be fair, it was like 3 a.m. Huh. And then we just go back to my room or the Shiz room, whatever you want to call it. And we're just like, all right, what are we going to do now? And looking around, it's like, dang it. Destructoid stole all our beer.
Well, there you go. Okay, my interpretation of what happened in this story.
Okay.
Okay, you were at a party with Destructoid.
Yes.
You were having a good time.
Yes.
And then you went to McDonald's.
Yes.
And then perhaps your caloric intake clouded your vision somewhat. So you went back, you knocked on a room of someone who wasn't Destructoid. Because you admittedly said that when you looked in the room, it looked like totally different people.
No. I didn't actually get to look in because they didn't even open the door that much.
All right.
It was definitely the same. It was a couple of rooms, actually. It was definitely the same two rooms.
Sure, sure. Okay. That doesn't follow the narrative of my story, though.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right. So they didn't recognize you because it was, in fact, a family on vacation.
Uh-huh.
To see, Washington, D.C. To see Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And
monuments
they tried,
and stuff.
They tried to steer you to a party upstairs.
Man, you know, that sounds so reasonable, I almost believe it.
Yeah, it's... I suppose it's better to say that Destructoid stole your beer. But I... Now, if they did... If they did, they by law of law, they should feature us at some point.
Oh, is that how we're gonna angle this? I don't know. It was really crappy beer. I'm not sure if it's worth much.
Oh, that's okay. We have a crappy show.
Oh, so, good night, everybody. It's a great start to 2013.
2013, everyone. So okay, Magfest. You had a good time there, though.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was.
What'd you do?
All kinds of things. It wasn't as, I don't know, I felt like last year was keyed up a little bit more. It was in a much bigger space going from 2011 to 2012. So it was in the same place as it was last year. So that wasn't new. I think I enjoyed the guests a lot more last year because they had like the Hey Ash, What's Your Playing crew, and such. Other people were there again, like Brental Floss, which I went to go see last year and didn't go see again. It was my first weekend to like really decompress after last year, so
yeah.
I spent a lot of time just sort of chilling out, sleeping in and blowing off panels I meant to go to, but I went to a lot of good ones. There was this one by my favorite by far. Probably shouldn't start with my favorite because then it'll all go downhill from there.
Go ahead.
My favorite was mostly because it was a surprise, was called The Secret Lives of NPCs by a couple of guys calling themselves Virtual Fools. Maybe you've heard of them. Maybe you haven't. I haven't. But it was actually really, really great. And then because I was press, you know, I got a press badge while I was there, I was able to like sit there and film the whole thing. So I bet you it's going to go up, at least portions of it might go up in our Powit TV MagFest coverage. That I'm still working on, but there's a couple of things done, and I'll mention those as I go along. But this is one of them, and I thought it was a really interesting concept. What do you think it means?
I'm guessing it's, and this is the first thing that came to my head when I heard this topic, is when the player's not in the game, what are they up to?
That's kind of what I thought it would be about, but it wasn't really.
Oh, that's what I want it to be.
Right? Maybe we can do that one sometime.
Like, I can imagine, like, Dragon Quest. You know, the guy, the shopkeeper who just walks back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and always, and, you know, is like, what will you buy today? You know, like, as soon as you're gone, he's like, oh, man. He's like, oh, man, now he's gone, but I really should have asked him to unblock me from this because I can't leave my room. Or something like that. There's these giant bricks in the way, you know.
Or like someone complained about how like some kid with a sword and a green cap always comes in and smashes all their pots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that would be. That's a great topic.
Right. It wasn't about that though, but they sort of built up to something like that because of how like AI NPCs can interact without player input and how that could be really interesting. But they start a little bit lower. Like, you know, there's the one person who stays in the one spot in the one town.
Yeah.
Who always says the same thing over and over again.
That's like the person by the fountain who says, "The goddess brings us great joy. Use this fountain to regain all your HP."
Right, exactly. And they, you know, that's their entire existence, is to just say that one thing to the player so that they can go and save the day. And so it builds from there. That starts with that. Then it goes into talking about like AI companions versus NPCs, because those have become more prevalent. And an AI companion, by their definition, was someone who can do all the same things the player can do, but isn't controlled by the player directly. So, like, I'm sorry, I'm going to bring this up already. The first Mass Effect reference of the new year.
I knew it was coming.
I could say Dragon Age, but it's still in the BioWare sphere of things.
Yeah, okay. Well, but, just, yeah. You know, if you started, just finish it up.
Sure. So the companions on your squad or in your party or whatever can do all the same things that the main character can do. They can fight, they can damage enemies, they can use, you know, magic or special powers of some kind. And they're essentially just like extensions of the main player and don't really act on their own without some kind of like tactical direction or something. So they want to like draw a distinction there, because that doesn't serve the same function. You know, it doesn't help guide the player into, this, you know, how to beat the game where they're supposed to go. They actually, had an anecdote from Ricky Lindholm of, have you heard of Garfunkel and Oates?
No.
Okay.
I know Simon and Garfunkel. So, and I know Holland and Oates.
Oh, that's...
Oh, that's what it's supposed to be like, back... I think I figured out this word, yes?
No. It's Ricky Lindholm, who's a comedian, and I cannot remember her name, her first name, but it's Mikuchi, something Mikuchi. She played the Gooch on... Scrubs. She had like a ukulele and just played songs all the time. She was the lawyer's girlfriend. Sorry. No, don't remember her.
It's been too long. Was she in later seasons?
Yeah, she was. She was. I mean, Scrubs reference. That's just so last decade. Anyway, so yeah, I guess, you know, she said she was talking about how she gets all the supporting roles, and she was able to like distill it down into like a few phrases that you can be guaranteed to see in the script as a supporting character. And being an NPC is kind of like that. Their only point is to show the main character how to win the day. Then there are other characters. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. The lines that they always have, like, I hear the darkness is coming, but I don't believe that. I'm going to keep building my shop or something, you know?
Right.
Their ship is destroyed, or I've heard strange things coming from the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, oh, I should probably go up there. So there's characters like that. There's like fourth wall ones who, sort of make fun of those tropes, or are like possible, bad translations, like, in Zelda 2, the I Am Error guy.
Yep.
But I mean, you know, you read it and you play Zelda 2. That's what it says. I Am Error.
Yep.
Like in katakana. So who knows if that was wrong or not. But yeah, there's all kinds of like gray areas, like the chickens in Zelda that can attack you back if you're a little too rough on them.
Are you telling me that the chickens in Zelda are NPCs?
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what else would they be?
Right. So,
your chickens.
It was a really fun panel. They opened up to questions to, like, you know, basically say, you know, prove us wrong. Like, you know, if you disagree with our classifications, can think of other examples. Really, it's a really good model for like a live Famicom Dojo podcast, essentially. So I kind of want to try something like that in the upcoming convention season. What do you think?
Have to have good Wi-Fi.
Right. So yeah, it's something to think about. But yeah, that was my favorite panel. My next favorite one is probably Juario's. You can play this live, where he actually did a review of a game. You know, he had like screenshots and slides and video. Yep. And stuff, and did it like it was an episode of his show. But you know, for like an hour long panel, he only did that for like maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah,
right. The rest of it was like a Q&A session. The thing I was waiting for, the reason I wanted to go, was because it was like the world premiere of his Famicommon Rider series trailer.
Awesome.
Right?
How did it look?
It looked amazing. I mean, that was money well spent. Like, I don't know who they had doing the effects, but I remember seeing, now there was like this test footage he had done like over a year ago, I think. and it put up. And I didn't realize that it was for this, but I should have put two and two together. And I'm like, wow, there's like great stunts, great costumes. I mean, and so for essentially doing it for as little as they asked for, and well,
the people who do the stunts, they're like kind of a dedicated team. You know, they do all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just like, wow, that, you know, they probably only, I'm just guessing, you know, the money they got was just to probably get them enough money, not like all of the cost, unless they just really loved this project and were hoping to get paid. I know. I never got to ask him about it. I was hoping to talk to him a bit more over the weekend. And because, like, you know, if you listen to last year's podcast, it was like me and Zach and Cinder and Juario, all doing a roundtable thing. That's online. I want to link that in the show notes for sure, so that people can go watch it, because we help support that their project, and cannot wait to see the finished disc. I think they're probably going to release it episode by episode online too, I would imagine, so they can get some advertising dollars for it, because it's going to be real popular, I think.
That's going to be epic.
Someone asked the question if there would be a Super Famicommon writer. He could not confirm or deny the existence of such characters, except to say that quite often there is a shadowy figure in these tokusatsu. Yeah, because in the tokusatsu style, there's always that, you know, mysterious, like Proto Man in Mega Man.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like Mega Man's tokusatsu, I suppose. Sort of. A little bit. It has certain tropes in common.
Okay.
And all that word means is, like, literally special filming, so.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited for that. Can't wait to see it, what comes of it. Please watch the trailer in the show notes. What else? Good fun times. So there are a bunch of panels I went to. But there's also a lot of stuff. Like, they have a wonderful huge vendor room. They have a wonderful even huger arcade section.
That's what I'm interested in, the stuff.
Yeah. So both of those will be covered in more detail, like in the videos. I have a walkthrough of the arcade, and like I stop at a couple of stations, including a strip pinball machine.
A strip pinball machine?
Yeah, it's actually made by it was Tecmo. In like 91 or 92, and so it's a video game. It's not an actual pinball machine.
Okay, that makes more sense, because strip games are a dime a dozen in Japan. I mean, well, they used to be. Arcades are kind of not around so much anymore, but like, especially like strip mahjong games.
You'd see
them all over, which I always thought was weird. And the people you see playing them are exactly the type of people you think would be playing a strip.
Oh, mahjong. Goodness! Well, I was one of those people, because I had to film it. Actually, Zero from Powit played it. So
it was pinball, like straight up pinball or pachinko.
It was pinball.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, there were like four different pinball boards you could play, and then at the end, depending on how well you did, you'd get a picture in all 16-bit glory.
Pinball's not a huge thing in Japan.
Right, so it's super weird, right?
Yeah, it is. That's worth a video.
Definitely. So Zero does succeed, at least partially, so we're going to have to censor that footage somehow.
Oh, okay.
But
stick little Famicom Dojo logos over the...
Right.
But like, it's 16-bit. I mean, you only have to cover a couple of pixels.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much. But there were lots of Nintendo versus arcade cabinets of different, like Hogan's Alley, Duck Hunt, Excitebike. I forget all the ones that were there. They're in the video, though. But
was
like
there Mario?
Mario? I think yes, so, maybe. Mario, like original Mario Brothers? What, wasn't original Mario Brothers already a versus game? Like, it wasn't like versus branded?
I'm talking about versus Super Mario Brothers.
Oh.
No, original Mario Brothers was before the versus series. But,
yeah.
But like, I just wonder if there's a Minus World.
Oh, no, I don't think I saw that there.
Oh, okay.
I probably would have tried it. But especially on free play, heck yeah.
Yeah.
But just seeing those arcade cabinets made me wonder if anyone in the dealer room had versus Excitebike for the Famicom Disk System.
That is the best version of Excitebike.
Is it? Because I hadn't played it. Actually, what really put me on the top was the Retroware TV panel, where they actually had people come up and play games. Like drew out of a hat, and they would play against someone on the Retroware TV crew. One of them was the versus Excitebike thing. So I'm like, all right, that settles it. I have to find out if anyone has this game. And sure enough, I go to Magier and Carlson, the proprietor there, who knows me by sight still. had a copy and gave me a generous discount.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I believe I tweeted that photo, too. I should really add all the stuff to the show notes.
You should. The same time you were at MagFest buying that is when I bought my MSX.
That's right, because you were tweeting about that, too. Oh, man.
Yep. No, I wasn't tweeting. I was Facebooking.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Twitter is a thing that I just started last week.
Right. Yeah, and you're a Famicom Vink, for anyone who's curious. Vink with two N's.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, I got... Because I made the terrible mistake of asking our Facebook community a question. Facebook community, if you're listening, I love you very much, but you make bad decisions for me.
Not to be fair, you were kind of asking them to do something that you were trying to convince yourself not to do anyway. It's like, talk me down from buying this awesome thing.
Yeah, I know, but like I'm very worried now because the end of the thing, I was like, talk me down, because I wanted to buy it, but I don't really have the money for it, you know. But, you know, I wanted people to give me reasons why I shouldn't get an MSX. You know what I mean?
There aren't any. There are no reasons.
Quiet you. But, like, I worry that if I would have, like, written the message, okay, standing on top of a really tall building right now, thinking of jumping, talk me down, people would be like, jump, man, do it! Jumping is awesome.
Something about YOLO. Oh boy.
Something like that. Gravity sucks. You know, something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I got the MSX. I haven't opened it yet because I'd kind of like to do an unboxing video. And sure. I picked up two games with it. I picked up Dragon Quest, the more expensive version, which is the, I guess someone has said on our Facebook that it's the reprint edition. Because it says MSX2 on it rather than MSX, but unfortunately now it makes me curious. Because the label says MSX2, I'm wondering if there's any changes, so I'm going to have to go back and buy the original version as well.
Which was less expensive anyway, right?
Well, no, they were the same price, but like, it's worth a lot less. But,
oh, I gotcha. So they were overcharging you for that one or undercharged you for the MSX2 copy?
Well, they're probably undercharging for all of them. Okay, this shop that I was at makes the glorious mistake of pricing all of their games the same price. Because they don't know anything about MSX.
No, okay.
So, like, for example, if it wasn't there, but if Metal Gear was there, it would be the same price as, like, you know, their absolutely common games, like Hyper Olympic or something, you know? Because they price every game exactly the same, because they clearly have no idea what games are worth. And that's also why this boxed MSX2 was the same as their possibly broken, unboxed Sony MSX1.
Oh, geez. Yeah, because I was going to ask, you did get the MSX2, right? So you're able to play the... Yeah. Oh, geez.
I picked up Dig Dug. Now, I've got a million versions of Dig Dug. First of all, Dig Dug is a great game.
Yes.
And second of all, it's really interesting because the cartridge has a hole going all the way through it.
Yeah, yeah, they're all like that though.
No, they aren't. Just that one.
I thought most MSX games had the hole all the way through it.
No, that was the only one I saw like that.
Those are the ones I've ever seen.
Well, the Dragon Quest one doesn't have any hole in it.
Weird. Okay. Well, that's something to investigate. Does anybody want us to cover the MSX? I mean, we have one now, so we could do it. But that's like before 8-bit. That's like SG-1000 territory. I mean, doesn't Nintendo really demark the beginning of the 8-bit era, like the third generation?
Well, they demark the third generation of consoles, but the MSX isn't a console, it's a computer.
Right, but then, like, so isn't like the Commodore 64 also a computer?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a little bit of a gray area, like what's a console and what isn't a console. I think we had this discussion on the podcast last year.
Let me tell you what the Commodore 64 is. When I went to elementary school, and the entire way through the elementary school, our computer lab was a bank of Commodore 64.
Okay.
And we did all our word processing and printing and learned Logo on that. So my mind, like, I know a lot of people consider the Commodore 64 mostly a game system, but the only experience I had with Commodore 64 in my early life was it being the definition of a computer.
Okay, but I mean, it's kind of both though, because all the MSXs, and they're made by different companies, they have that game cartridge slot. It's like a keyboard, which hooks up to your TV, right?
Well, yeah.
And then there's like a game cartridge slot in the side or wherever else they put it, depending on who made it. Away you go. So you can use it just as a video game platform if you wanted to.
But I mean, a lot of the early computers were like that. You know, Commodore 64 is the cartridge slot. The Atari computers had, well, maybe they didn't actually. But you know, a lot of early computers, the Tandy computers all had a slot, you know, but I mean, It's what a computer was in those. Well, what a consumer computer was in those days. You know,
man.
Apple II, you know, didn't ship with disk drives. You know,
right.
You know, you had the option of hooking up a cassette drive to it or a disk drive, or I don't think there was any cartridges for the Apple II.
Not that I'm aware of. No, it was all. 5 1/4 inch floppies. But I mean, this does bring me to the next thing I bought.
Okay, go ahead.
Because this was, you know, the Famicom was released during that era where it was, you know, very much just a console, didn't have a keyboard. And did we talk about this, or was this some other conversation I had with somebody about, like,
I think we've talked
it's
about
it's a console if it can use a keyboard but doesn't come with one.
The family computer.
I know it's called that, but the primary interface is a controller, a revolutionary controller that every other console from that point on emulated.
True, including the MSX, which you can get, like, B-controller type things, which have the, you know.
I have an MSX controller. I thought it was.
I don't have an MSX controller.
Maybe I'll send you mine.
Send me that.
Because I can't use it.
I'll send you the MSX. One of us has to send the other person this.
Okay, because when we were there for Tokyo Game Show last, I picked it up thinking it was like a third, you know, like an expansion port controller for a Famicom, because it was a Hudson controller, but it was a Hudson branded MSX controller.
I would like that, because otherwise I got to play Dig Dug with a keyboard.
Those work with the Master System, by the way, because it's the same plug, and I guess technically it could probably work with the Genesis too.
It's the same plug. Well, I mean, the Genesis, the Master System, and the Atari 2600 all have the same plug.
Right.
And there's partial compatibility with all of those, but like it depends how the button, you know, how what the buttons, you know, I don't know what tied.
Right,
for.
Right. But I mean, I've just heard that that Master System and MSX in particular are cross compatible in that way. So I would like to test that out. Hey, if only we had a show that we would do video and demonstrate this for people. Maybe I should record some footage with that controller first and then send it to you.
Yeah. Well, don't you have two?
No, I just have the one.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
Although, I still need to get a third player controller from you, actually.
I have two of them in an Amazon box in the trunk of my car right now.
Awesome.
Well, like, I have got a B controller for you and a Hori pad.
Yes.
I got both, so you can do like a comparison video. But I don't know. I've got this box of obscure, crazy hardware, including a Satellaview right now.
Mm-hmm.
A complete Satellaview. And I'm just trying to think of which stuff I'm going to keep and which stuff I'm going to send.
Right. Well, we'll figure that out. I mean, that's, you know, we're wrapping up season two and everything finally after 4 years. And there's all this stuff about like 16-bit add-ons that I would love to do. But that would be like 4 or 5 episodes and we can't fit it all in. So we'll do it later.
So I got a Satellaview and I've also got the Super Nintendo modem. 2 different Super Nintendo modems, actually.
Oh my gosh, okay.
I've got the X-band modem and the NTT data line.
Oh wow.
With its controller. So like there's all kinds of stuff that we keep tuned to Famicom Dojo. There's a lot of really cool stuff coming up.
So yeah, wow. Super huge tangent, but I think people are actually glad we're talking about this stuff again. Moving on from Destructoid beer stealing.
Yeah. We're
So the thing I got, cause like I was saying earlier, the Famicom came out before this generation sort of defined itself by like what the Famicom became. I got a Famicom keyboard, which goes into that expansion port that we mentioned previously that this third controller would go into. Not only did I get that, but I got something that, has to go through the Famicom keyboard to work, which is a data recorder. And what that is, for those who don't know, is it's essentially just a cassette tape, like a cassette deck. Like,
did that come out almost at launch? I mean, it was really early.
It was super duper early, as I recall, because it was definitely available by 1984, because that's when they showed the original prototype for the NES at CES, which had like built-in keyboard, data recorder, etc.
Because I gotta say that, like, one of the reasons that they called it the family computer rather than, you know, some kind of game system, and why they pushed those things so hard was because of, you know, the video game crash.
Right. Exactly.
So people weren't trust, like, computers seemed to be good in business. You know, they were doing fairly well, but video game systems seemed to be a bit of a fool's errand.
What also seemed like a better sell was a toy than a video game system.
Oh yeah, and that's how they marketed it in America as with the robot. It was like, it's not a video game system; it's a robot toy, and it plays video games.
I mean, you know, we never covered Rob ourselves because Phil Bond did a great job of it years ago. But it's like he never really delved into the history. It was just like how this thing works. And we never talked about it on our show because we had access to, or we were planning on doing something with the Famicom robot and then doing like an opposing thing with Rob. And we never got around to it.
I sold my Famicom robot.
Man.
I needed the money. Like, I had a boxed Famicom robot, and I think I sold it for like $250. I mean, I really couldn't pass it up. I needed the money.
Oh, definitely. So, you know, maybe we'll have access to one of those again someday, maybe, but
they can be acquired, you know. If we have a game, as it goes with a lot of Famicom Dojo stuff, if we have a game plan, I can get the stuff. But I think for that to happen with some of the more expensive stuff, we need to sell more DVDs.
Right. If only there was a season 2 DVD. If only.
If only.
Well, anyway. Yeah, so I know people have wanted to hear about the data recorder and the keyboard and stuff for a while. And to kind of like go back to the thing about it being a computer, right? Like, it comes with a cartridge, Family Basic. Like an actual programming language that you can do stuff with. It's not like the version.
Really cool.
Is it? I've never used it, and I haven't tried to use it yet.
Manual with it?
No, there was no manual. It would be in all in Japanese anyway. It wouldn't really help me.
No, but there's all these tables and stuff. There's like sprites and stuff built in already.
Oh, really?
You can like call forward.
Oh, well, I'm sure I can find something online that would have it translated for me. I'm not worried about that part.
Might be getting confused though with Family Basic version 3, which is a major update and a really much better.
But, you know, I'm a programmer by trade anyway, so that it won't bother me either way. I could probably make some pretty cool stuff. The only thing I'm worried about is there's like a battery slot in the cartridge, which I think takes AA's, and like, there's probably no way to get that information off. So I don't want to dedicate too much time to making a nice program in there with whatever limited memory exists, because
there is a way of getting it off.
Is it on the data recorder?
It's the data recorder.
Okay. All right. So maybe
that's
there's
how
ways
you save programs off the cartridge you copy to the data recorder.
Okay. So I haven't tried this yet. We did mention in our very first Famicom episode that you can save game data from Excitebike and MacWriter. Now does Wrecking Crew too? I don't think I have Wrecking Crew, so I'll probably have to procure a copy of that. But those are all cartridge based games. What's that?
We covered Wrecking Crew in our show. Remember, it's on your Zelda disc.
No, I know that we didn't say that Wrecking Crew had the capability of like making your own levels and saving them onto this thing. Okay. Like, you know, it's no coincidence that it was in our first episode. Because of that reason, we didn't directly make the connection.
Oh, yeah.
So we can kind of go back to that first episode now and like be like, hey, these three games. Versus Excitebike is a disk system game, so it probably doesn't need to save to the data recorder.
It can't save to the data recorder.
It can't. Okay.
No.
But that makes sense.
It doesn't need to because you save right to.
So yeah, this definitely came out before the disk system was released, which is funny because we kind of jump right into the disk system with our first episode anyway because we didn't have the data recorder, and the disk system was like a big enough like oh my god for people to realize what was going on with the whole password saves and cartridges and whatnot. But this is another kind of lost piece of how they would save data before battery backups existed or were technically feasible.
The thing about the data recorder is that it of course allowed people to customize things and bring it over to other people's houses. It was like the first like way of sharing as well. You know, because this
right.
I mean on a console system
that
like,
was huge.
Something to take for granted now, but it wasn't until like a decade later that a second way of doing it Neo Geo did it in 1990.
Right, which is almost a decade later.
Yeah.
Six, seven years. Yeah. But the thing I really want to try that we sort of discussed might be possible is that because it saves the data to the tape, I guess if it's able to, if the sampling rate is high enough, we can actually record the sound
As an MP3,
send the MP3 to someone, record it back to a tape, and then have someone run that on their data recorder. So what we could do while we're doing this episode is see if that actually works, and then have the MP3s available online for people to like download our Famicom Dojo tracks. Wouldn't that be cool?
Now I know some people have done this with old computer programs for like the Tandy and stuff.
Yeah.
So it theoretically is possible. I think it would just be a matter of getting the sampling right.
Yeah. So I'm sure there might be even tutorials out there that might tell us how to do it. And if not, then we'll be the first, I suppose. But I doubt we'll be the first. Just putting that out there. But I would, you know, there's going to be a video about it that I recorded while I was there. It's probably already up by now. By the time this podcast goes up, the video should be up too. Just like, you know, me showing the hardware off and talking about it a little bit. Kind of like I did here, but you actually get to see it. Then at some point this year, I hope this year anyway, we will actually cover the data recorder and Famicom keyboard because it's so cool. It's so cool. It's so cool.
But like, yeah, with the data recorder and a keyboard, technically you do have a computer there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, at that point, but I mean, yeah, yes.
But like, it's one of those things. It's not the first time a game console has come out and tried to bill itself as a computer for some reason. For the Famicom, it gave it credibility.
Yeah.
For Sony PlayStation 2 in Europe is billed as a computer.
Okay.
So they'd pay less tax.
Oh, right. And they can get away with that because
what they did was they sold a keyboard add-on and this actual like programming language. It's pretty rare to find these days, and it had very limited use, but theoretically you could, and I think you could even hook up a printer to it, so like it could be a computer, although a really gimped, weird, hard to control one.
Right. Huh. I know, like, the PS3 is able to be used in, like there are, like, import restrictions because of how powerful it is to certain countries
or
whatever.
Marketing. That's just marketing.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Okay. The PS2, they said they couldn't ship to, like, what was it, Saudi Arabia or something, because it could be used to control missiles or something. Like, that was one of their, like, PR things that turned out to be just a bunch of hooey.
Okay.
But
I mean, I know they use, like, a RAID PS3 is for, like medical imaging or something like that.
Or they did when you could still install Linux on them. Now you can't. So.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Although, you know, one of the programs that you could install on your PlayStation 3 was a Folding at Home as well.
Yes, yes. I think maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, but no, they were hooking tons of them together to have basically low cost Linux, banks. I don't know. But yeah, apparently, you can't do that with any of the new ones now because you can't install Linux anymore.
Yeah. We could probably go on forever about this stuff because it's so super interesting.
So MAGFest.
Yeah. Like I said, I met some cool people. Like Cinder was there. I met some people at the Shiz crew. I met some people at Structoids. So shout out to those guys. Sorry I didn't get to talk to you a whole lot this year, Justin. Just, I guess things didn't line up. But, you know, I saw some more Pilot Crew, like I said, to Zero. Thanks for hanging out. Yertle and his brother. I ran you guys very briefly. Didn't realize that Yertle had changed his Twitter handle. So he was like, "Hey, I'll see you at the convention." And I'm like, "Okay, guy." Probably, but I didn't realize it was him. What else? Oh, ran to Earl Grey again. Who starred in our Earl Grey the Third skit about purchasing a Mark III, which Mad Gear did have. Again, had another one, and someone had bought it by the end of the weekend. $250. It was listed there. So
that's a bit steep, though.
But someone bought it.
Well, of course.
I'm telling you.
Like con prices, you know, I used to vend at cons. I know what people will buy.
Right. Who else did I run into? Earl and Carson. It's good to see you guys again. I ran into Zach. What's his Twitter handle? I don't have it in front of me, but remembered me from 2 years ago when I still did the thing where, like, find Sean Orange at this convention, like, be one of the first three to find him, and he'll give you a Famicom Dojo DVD. So you still remember me from that, like, 2 years ago. That was pretty cool. We chatted for a bit.
Well, that's good. You worry if you're listening. You are on the short list of possible guests for next year's VinkCon. So.
Yeah, if you don't want to go to MAGFest again and would rather go to Japan, to Vink's house...
not the whole house.
Just the bathroom in the hallway.
I haven't secured the rights to the whole house because VinCon always happens when my wife and daughter are sleeping. So.
Right, exactly. So I know it's kind of the same problem as NoBrandCon had at, like, the university. It's like there's always some other bigger event going on. And in this case, SleepCon is a much bigger event.
Although I did expand a little bit, I was able to use portions of the kitchen this year for the vendor.
Yes. So that does remind me, if anyone hasn't seen the VinkCon videos, we'll link those in the show notes as well. VinkCon 2013 is greatly expanded from last year and actually looked like a lot of fun. I kind of almost wish I hadn't gone to MAGFest.
We got a few comments like that. Well, I mean, MAGFest is great, but you can't get the high caliber guests as basketball from the NBA.
Oh, right. Lord Toon also did a great teaser poster for it, which we really should have shared beforehand. But we ended up linking that to our Facebook page, which is a place you should go. Go to the Facebook page. Like us there. We're always posting interesting things. So if you've been following us on Twitter or like the Facebook page, you would have seen the cool stuff that we have been procuring when it was happening, essentially. Be part of that MSX conversation next time and convince Vink to buy more stuff.
Oh, man. Like, yesterday I saw something. I'm not even going to say what it was because yesterday I saw something while I was out shopping, and I was like gonna pose it to people, and then I'm like, no. If I put that tweet up, you know, I might as well just buy it, because
right.
I'm asking an enthusiast community of retro gamers whether I should buy something that has got me even considering buying it as a retro gamer. So yeah.
Right on. Yeah. So I guess that's all for the MAGFest front and for this podcast, because man. We're going to have to definitely revisit some of these topics again, the MSX and data recorder especially.
So I guess the question I'll pose to our comment people right now is, of the wild tangent we went on, what would you like to hear covered in the show? What sounds interesting to you, and what do you want to see in Famicom Dojo 2013? Because the world has just opened up. We've got some time. We've got a lot of stuff. Tell us what you want to see.
Right on. So, like I said, follow us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo. Actually, we'll link all of our all three of the Twitter accounts there. So I got Famicom Vink and Sean Orange as well. And then we're Famicom Dojo on Facebook, where we can see all these cool pictures and convince us to buy things we want to buy anyway.
Yes.
As well as if you have any comments, like you actually want to record a comment for us with your voice, so you can call us at 608-492-1923, and we might play that comment on the show. It's
yep.
happened before, several times, as a matter of fact. And then last but not least, if you are listening to the podcast, which I assume you are, if you're hearing the sound of my voice, please leave a comment on our iTunes storefront and rate us, because that's how other people will get to find out all these wonderful things about Destructoid's beer stealing tendencies. I mean retro video games.
Don't judge us just by this podcast.
Oh man. Okay, listen to the other ones too, because they're all there on iTunes for free. And if you like the show, which some people say they have,
yep.
I've heard good things occasionally. Just please let us know what you think so others can find it. I guess that's all for this week, for this start of this year. Good start to 2013, I guess.
Yeah. Let's keep it going.
All right. Going out now to buy more money.
Famicom Dojo.